go. Another episode of We Suck. What the hell was that? This is a real bit. We are not editing this, Brett. This is too great. This is We Talk episode 161. What was, Chris, did you fall?
He's fallen and he can't.
No, no, no. Just my recording device fell.
Can we call anyone? Like, are you okay there?
You have one of those.
You have a life
buttons.
Link? You have a life alert? You know, we worry about you.
Okay, okay. I'm okay now. I'm opening my beer. Nothing happens after the beer opens.
We can hear it.
You protect that like gold.
A professional. Well, that is a man. That's a man right there. He's drinking a beer. Actually, that is the man with no nickname. A man, he needs a shot of gasoline. That's Chris.
Yes, and only real men drink apricot wheat ale, so... you know I'm matcha.
That's right. And then we also got with us, we got a man who's the reporter and all things Cub, or the Cub Reporter K. One or the other. He's a man, he's going 116. Keith.
I'm going on the 116.
That's slightly confusing as well.
Strangely, that is my bus.
There you go.
I don't know why that seems overly specific, but I'm happy to be here regardless.
Nevertheless, the big bully Busick of the podcast. He is the chief defender of the faith. He is a man. He's so hot. He sees steam. Is that the lyric, Brett?
I get so hot, I see steam.
There you go, Brett.
That's right.
Yeah,
you don't see steam?
I do.
No, Mo, he seems surprised by the fact you can see steam.
That's not really, it's more of a Legion of Substitute Heroes kind of power, isn't it?
That's right. I see
water more. Vapor when it is raised to a specific temperature.
And, I am the chief defender. No, I'm the conference of charisma. Our best open ever. What the hell's going on this week? Apparently, we've all been drinking shot gasoline. Anyways, I'm forget the day. It's the night, and I'll scream. Or what's the lyric? I don't know.
I lost the plot already. So,
anyways, Mo. yeah. Get the day, cause we're gonna scream. That's it. And man, if the sore the listeners, they're probably screaming already.
they're screaming off their off the turning it off.
All right. Well. So, anyways, last week was 5 weeks or 5 years. I mean, last week was 5 years. 5 years we've done this son of a gun, and
we've been recording simultaneously for 5 days. Yes.
Me and Chris and Brett, we had a little powwow. We had a little meeting, and Keith, we decided to give you another 5 years to finally get this straight.
Fair enough.
And you can start by this week's, I guess, the topic this week, and what a crackerjack of a topic it is. Is yours?
Well, I like that.
It's episode 161, by the way. I should mention 161. We Talk Comics. WTC shows its age.
I especially our references like Cracker Jack. Yeah. Who gets that nowadays? Do they even make Cracker Jack anymore?
They do, but they put nothing but crap in them. Like they're. You used to get like a toy, you get a like a thing, you, like it's for like 10 tattoo. Years it's been tattoo and sticker. That's what you get in Cracker Jacks. You get a temporary tattoo. Like they don't even give me a permanent tattoo. Cheap bastards.
I love that you are seriously lamenting the fact that the 2 cent toy in Cracker Jacks is you now have to put up instead with a 1 cent tattoo. That's your complaint in life.
It's a
first world problems.
It's a they're running a ripoff organization.
Third world problems, man. Kids from third world countries used to make those toys.
that's
those kids are out of work now.
That's jobs they do not have anymore. They used to. No, I can't go any further with this.
Make America great again. Anyways, Keith.
I like that. I mean, Mo's only defending them because he's in the pocket of Big Cracker Jack.
That's the funniest thing you've ever said on the podcast.
I think we need to start bringing back some old words, perhaps. Like, currently we are blithering idiots, yes?
Yes. Let's get cracking on the show. Keith, what the hell's the topic?
So, everyone talks about comics from when they were young, when they were kids, comics that they treasure or treasure too much. I had this idea that we would talk about comics from when we were born, as opposed to comics that we read as children. So I wanted to go back and each of us individually pick, doesn't matter what it was, as long as it was published or at least cover dated the month we were born. So I thought this would be, I'm the only one who thought this would be fun. Apparently that's what I love about this show, though. One of us has an idea and everyone just goes along and, you know, and just grabs life by the horns.
By the rules of the game nowadays, we're not allowed to say we can't do that. Like, you get to pick the subject for the week.
So this is what I wanted to do was to look at comics that got published the month that we were born. Who wants to jump in with their first one or their one, though, the one that they put in the archives? Everyone knew to bring 10, right?
Well, I did bring 2.
Oh, 2, nice.
Well, because I couldn't decide. Yeah, I didn't feel it was correct to decide between Marvel and DC. So I went with Marvel and DC.
Fair enough. Well, Brett, why don't you jump right into it?
All right, fair enough. I'll start with, I'll start with my Marvel. I went with Captain Marvel number 25. And the reason...
What is the date and year there?
March 1973.
So if you guys want to send him something for his birthday, March.
You get in a time machine and you set it for March 1973.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Perfect. But the reason that I was attracted to this one is because it's Captain Marvel on the cover. That's a fine start. And he's saying, "The Hulk, Namor, all of them attacking me. But why? Why?" And it says, "New, the greatest battle issue ever. Every hand against him." And I thought, well, the greatest battle issue ever. That sounds exciting. I wasn't quite as excited as I was hoping, I'll admit. So the story was by Mike Friedrich, the co-creator of Ghost, was it Ghost Rider? Yes, Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, yeah.
Yep. With some guy named Jim Starlin on the art. Right, it's one of those issues where you really do kind of need to know what's going on to jump into it. It's not the greatest first comic in your collection, that's for sure. There is a lot of story that was set up previously that they actually don't really do a very good job of breaking into. And as far as the battle goes, it's one of those cases where it's the Super Skrull. So he turns into the Hulk and Zarek, the Supreme Kree, Metazoid, Akon, Namor.
Oh, Akon, I miss him.
I listen to these names, I'm like, we are in the 70s, folks. We are.
70s Yon Rogg, Ronan the Accuser, who's this? Megaton. So, yes, lots and lots of people were all played by the Super Skrull in this one. But in fairness, but the villain is called Master Lord.
That's awesome.
And the scroll plan is called Operation Kree Crusher.
See, what's amazing is I know we've all read the official handbook to the Marvel Universe, and I'm pretty sure none of those characters are in it, which means they appear fewer than three times.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know, because I'm looking through here, and I'm like, dude, I don't know who half of these villains are, right?
I mean, I like that you said Operation Kree Crusher is the name of the name of the plan?
The Skrull's plan, Operation Kree Crusher.
I'm pretty sure that's also a finishing move for somebody in wrestling. Kree Crusher.
Because, you know, it's chock full of great lines. Like, as miserably as your new mysterious Master Lord will fail, you have a mighty fighting spirit, Captain Marvel, but that just heightens my own energies, and no lowly Kree can match that power. Wrong, warrior. Ignoring your racial hatred, you ignore the facts. I am a warrior, raised in the incomparable Kree Empire, trained to use his body to the fullest, and thus the one true space-born Captain Marvel. I don't even know what the hell happened.
End scene.
Yes, but it features a wonderful ba-room as the room falls and crashes amongst them. But it wraps up with a cliffhanger. So honestly, I'm interested in reading number 26. But this
in 4 weeks, I'm definitely going to pick.
That's right.
That we have to do. We have to review a comic from the month after we were born.
In April 1973, I am ready for number 26. But this comic right here was totally what I picture of a 1970s comic.
It is interesting what you said about how like there wasn't a. It's everything people pretend comics in the 70s were.
Yes.
Except like the opposite. It's like it's not self-contained. It does not tell you everything that happened before.
No.
It does not have an ending. It's like everything that people pretend the like remember in the 70s when they did comics that way? No, they really didn't.
It's true. You know, there's not even at the beginning. Like there is no like page that sets everything out.
But there's so much dialogue explaining what happened. You don't know.
But no, there isn't. This one actually doesn't have the dialogue explaining what happened. Here it is. It comes in beginning a new era of greatness, a taste of madness. He's fighting a couple of guys three guys that have crazy costumes. No way. Nope, Captain Marvel freaks, you haven't missed anything. We just know what you like, action. Mar-Vell, man of the Kree, longed for rest, considering his battles finished with the defeat of Dr. Mind, our last ish. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. After that, okay. It's fighting.
Okay, but, I bet even in like 1973 or whatever it was there, March is 1973, I bet Jim Starlin's art kicked ass.
No, actually. Honestly, it's a little weak. He improved a lot. His faces are pretty flat. You know, he's got the people have good muscles, but you can see there's talent there. But he's improved a lot from
how are Submariner's abs in 1973? By the way.
Oh well, let's go. I mean, he's only in a panel. So, wait, and it's the Super Skrull. So, well, it's weird because the Hulk looks really wrong, and Submariner actually looks really wrong too. His face is just terrible, and his arm is doing something that is not possible for an arm to actually do.
Well, there's the show image right there. Then,
yes. So. In fairness,
the good old days.
Definitely the art a little bit weak in this case. So there. Now, would you like me to do my DC comic as well, or do you want to save that?
I don't know. That was so fun.
See, the interesting thing, and I'm glad I did this, it's very interesting to see the difference between the Marvel and the DC comic from 1973. So,
we'll go right into it.
Well, let's do it. Then go ahead, because I also have a Marvel and DC.
Okay.
So, but I might have had a very different experience from the way this is going, but maybe not.
Well, the other comic I chose was The Demon number 7, because I believe it's the first appearance of Clarion the Witch Boy.
Ah, where would DC be without him?
Money in the bank right there.
And so in this case, you know, there's a nice long introduction to the Demon Etrigan and stuff like that. Obviously it's a Kirby book, so I mean the art's really
Kirby?
Engaging and Kirby-esque, yes. Very Kirby-esque.
He is generally acknowledged as the most Kirby-esque artist, yeah.
Yeah, thankfully it's better than that Jim Starlin guy. But, so, you know, it's the demon, and then he meets Clarion the Witch Boy, and the thing about this is that I actually just thought it was more a really confusing storyline, because not a whole lot happens. It's this introduction of Clarion and his cat, but there's next to no actual demon in the story. It's really a lot more Jason Blood, and yeah, it's like Jack Kirby just decided that he wanted to introduce Clarion, and so most of the issue is just people talking and actually not fighting. There's a whole multitude of pages that are just people at a party talking. And really, you know, finally the demon shows up again on page 20. And, yeah.
This is like one of those old backdoor pilots where, like, Fonzie would come in at the beginning, and then you'd have 20 minutes of someone else's show, and then Fonzie comes in at the end.
That's actually pretty much what it is. But to me, it's so totally different, because it's really slowly paced. And an introduction to a character that you could tell that he intended to kind of bring in again, you know, versus Captain Marvel, which is just action from page one. Truly, that's the way they intended it. So there's a total difference between their two comics at this point, especially with the Kirby one. But this one, you know, there's no question. The storyline wraps up. It's like a one-shot deal, and it seems older even than the 70s, or maybe all Kirby stuff seemed like the 70s, and perhaps that Captain Marvel one, other than what we expect of the writing, seemed almost more 80s. You know, maybe it was ahead of its time, and Kirby was right on the time. I don't know, but yeah, it's I didn't like the demon as much, but maybe that's just because it was not much happened. And I read it after Captain Marvel, where everything changed. That's what they told me.
And it was the greatest battle of all time.
That's right. That's right.
Still holds up as the greatest battle, I assume.
I perhaps it does. Probably not. Actually, it was really good.
Well, I'll jump in quickly.
Quickly, we still have 45 minutes to fill.
Yeah, well, you're only one person's talk, though. And I'm sure that we'll fill up. I know Chris has a monologue about Chuck Dixon he wants to do at the end of the show. torn between Marvel and DC, I choose neither. Or neither, as the case may be. I went with Gold Keys Star Trek, later numbered as number 18, but it's Gold Key, so it's actually numbered 90210-305.
Nice.
That's I have no idea why Gold Key used this weird numbering system on their covers. That is actually, that is 90210-305. This is a comic called The Hijacked Planet, which is, it is Spock in a love story. The Enterprise has been entrusted with a planet that has been recorded onto biomagnetic tape, and is in a sphere, and the someone's trying to steal the sphere. The Enterprise is in charge of it. Someone like tricks Spock into stealing it. It's one of those great Spock love stories, as Star Trek does so well.
Actually, there's a couple of those, you know, which is odd. You don't expect that, but they do exist.
The strange part is what was actually odd for me mostly was the idea that you would record an entire planet miniaturized onto this little globe, but that you do it on magnetic tape. Really inefficient.
That's true. As we all know, bottled cities are the way to go.
That's right. That is essentially what it is. It's basically Kandor. Like, it's, they use this, they like, they've kind of used like transporter technology to turn everyone into data, and then he's got this like this sphere about the size of a basketball that they can't seem to keep their hands on because they lose it three times during the issue.
That's awesome.
There are unfortunately no art credits on this. I looked it up. It wasn't an artist I knew. I think it actually, I might have the name. Alberto Giolitti was the artist on these gold keys. It was an Italian artist. It looks kind of Alex Toth-y, like just the style. I it was a neat issue. I'm on a Star Trek kick right now, so I dug this up. The oddest and my favorite part of the issue is that a dog helps them with everything, and then Kirk's complaining about the dog being on the bridge at the end of the issue because it's like the shows. There's the wrap up joke.
Yes.
And so Scotty says, "I knew how you felt about having pets aboard, so I thought." I'd recorded him again before you got him shot or something. And Kirk says, quite right, Mr. Scott, actually, I was thinking of having him served in the officer's mess. And Scotty laughs. End of episode. I like the last little bit that we're going to eat the dog. That's good. That's good. Captain Kirk right there.
Kirk hates dogs.
Apparently my takeaway from this issue is that Spock can't keep his hands on a basketball sized thing that is the entire humans and civilization of an entire world. Because why keep an eye on that?
Hardly seems important.
A woman was able to buy that Spock was in love with her, so he could trick her, and Kirk hates dogs.
So it's just like season three then, basically.
Basically, yeah. if all of it was if the world that they ended up on looked exactly like 1960s LA, so that they could save money, then it would be exactly like a season three episode.
Yes, or any number of backlot.
That's right. If it could look like the set that was used last week for Ironsides, then it would definitely.
Yes, locked in. Well, this cost us $24. Excellent. All right, we're gonna do it.
It was fun. I might. It occurred to me that Star Trek is the first trade paperback I owned. Gold Key Star Treks had been collected into trades.
Actually, you know, I owned one of those as well.
And yeah, like so,
I loved some of those stories.
Is that where you read this?
This was actually there was a Star Trek Humble Bundle a couple of months ago, and I actually got it so I could get all of Mike Johnson's Star Trek run, the new run. But there was a whole bunch of these Gold Key archives in it, so I went back and dug up the. Turned out there was one published May 1973, and so that was where I read this. All right, that's it for me. This was fun. I hadn't even downloaded these. Like I got that Humble Bundle to get the IDW stuff and like the newer stuff, and then didn't even bother downloading these. So I'm actually go read some more of these. This is pretty enjoyable.
And see how many other animals Kirk hates.
I'll bring that back in 4 weeks. That'll be our topic: is the heroes of our age and what animals they hate.
He'll be like fucking gerbils.
Chris is in charge of Han Solo. Right, who's up?
Fucking Minox.
I'm thinking I had a pretty different experience than the rest of you, actually. Because when I looked up what books were published in the date of my birth, it's like they came together, both comic like companies came together tablets? And had a little party. There are so many important issues published in August of 1972.
Oh, I thought it was
18. We have the first appearance of Ghost Rider, Spotlight number 4.
Wow.
We have the first Defenders issue ever. As well as like wacky little gems like Chili, Millie's redheaded rival.
Excellent.
I had a tough time picking, actually. There's so much kooky stuff going on here. Really kooky and fun. I also learned, just coincidentally, that I was the only one alive while Stan Lee was editor-in-chief. I was only alive a month before he quit, but and changed his name to publisher of Marvel. So that's bragging rights. But the issue I ended up going with, I went over to DC, and Justice League of America 100, the introduction of the Seven Soldiers of Victory, which, of course, Grant Morrison made a huge deal.
This is awesome because, Chris, my book is also a Justice League, also is a Crisis on Two Earths. And is the next one is 107, and it's part of a trade paperback. So I read the whole thing, which included Justice League 100. So I just read this like yesterday. So this is going to be great. Go ahead.
Alrighty. Well, it is the 100th anniversary meeting of the Justice League, and of course, for no apparent reason, they are sort of zapped over to Earth 2 because there's a big crisis going on. Some sort of hand is threatening to destroy the entire universe, blah, blah, blah.
Well, just that planet.
It doesn't really matter. The plot is really secondary to this book. So Dr. Fate sort of deciphers that they have to talk to this character named the Oracle and can contact him through combining the magical powers of Johnny Thunder and Zartana to summon this character called the Oracle, who we find out who can only see the past, which is a really strange thing for the Oracle, but okay.
Antenna?
Well, it sort of turns out the only way to save Earth 2 from this giant hand is to summon the Seven Soldiers of Victory. Only problem is nobody knows they never existed. So magical hijinks ensue. And in true Justice League fashion, they split off into groups of three. And have their own separate adventures. I, unfortunately, was only party to, and I actually am really looking forward to Mo's review to see how the rest of the teams sort of split up. Of the Elongated Man, the Atom, and I think Hawkman. I'm spacing on that now. It doesn't really matter. Issue was actually entertaining, but for all the wrong reasons. three times in this issue, actually every time they refer to the Crimson Avenger, he's referred to the Crimson Avenger and his Oriental Aid wing.
Excellent.
That's good 70s.
That is his entire name.
So true.
The best scene in the comic book was Black Canary, Zartana, and Wonder Woman serving cake to the rest of the Justice League while they ogled them. And they made comments of, oh, you men, the only way we can get through to you is through your stomachs. Wonder Woman was rocking, or Earth One Wonder Woman anyway, was rocking the 1970s Denny O'Neill white pantsuit.
No, she was wearing a skirt, but it was white.
It was that era, man.
Yeah, it was that era. She was Diana Prince. She had no powers.
Yeah. Other things to enjoy is the one panel of a Snapper Carr lamenting the fact he couldn't be there because he betrayed the team 25 issues ago.
That's a long memory for the 70s.
It's a long memory now. Can you imagine anyone like referring to something that happened 25 issues ago?
No.
Now and expecting any like resonance with the audience?
No, I recently reread some Justice Leagues that are newer than that, and I'm like, who are half of these characters? Who's Pandora? Like, it's kind of coming back to me, but important at the time. Snapper Carr was like, those are the glory days of Snapper Carr.
What? I hate to tell you this, Snapper Carr was hated. Snapper Carr, no, seriously, I'm not even kidding you. Snapper Carr was the Jason Todd of his era. Like, people hated him. They had to write him out of the book because of complaints.
Yeah, but they still bring him back 25 issues later for a little cameo.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
They also felt the need to explain why Adam Strange wasn't at the meeting. Took three panels for that, but...
Yeah, well, that's the 70s. And but now I have come to the realization that next time we do an interview together, I finally have the introduction to Mo. He is my Caucasian aide.
But I have to say I truly enjoyed this book and this entire project. But mostly because of casual racism and sexism.
Well, sure.
That was what I was hoping to get out of it, Chris.
Oh, we're going back to the 70s. Chris, the thing is further along in the series, there's a scene where they go back. Because like you say, they're going back in time to find the Seven Soldiers of Victory. So they go back in time to find a vigilante who's being held by some Native Americans who are going to burn him at the stake, basically. And it was Green Arrow, and I think that was Green Arrow. I can't remember exactly who saved him. I remember Green Arrow is one of them. Anyways, they save him, and he goes, "These primitive Jaspers didn't even take my guns," and I'm like, "What?
Wow!
What?" I did have one burning question you can answer now.
Okay.
Did any of the women get an adventure, or did they stay behind to clean up the kick?
Well, they were with them. That's right, because it was Green Arrow. Now I remember, and Black Canary. Oh, that's right. Black Canary was there, and Johnny Thunder. And they open it with Black Canary with Johnny Thunder going, "Come on, Green. Come on, Black Canary. Let's go this way." Right. And meanwhile, he's pulling her arm, and then Green Arrow was pulling her other arm and going, "Hey, that's my lady. You're bending." And then Black Canary goes, "Man, if that's what you guys think, I'm my own woman. I'll go my own way." And I'm like, it's exactly what you're talking about. Like, is that...
Did Snapper Carr ever, like, say, like, "Oh, I haven't been on a Justice League adventure in a coon's age"?
No, but there was terms like that being used. Like, not far off. Like, it's pretty... It was crazy.
I had somebody I had somebody at work actually use a Coon's Edge the other day, and I was shocked. You must be
Cracker Jack of a saying.
I feel like we should talk old timey if we're going to use that kind of language. That's I don't think that's okay.
So, anyways, like I say, so that was the only time I remember the appearance of a dame during any of these books. No more. There was no broads, no dames, except for Black Canary in that scene that I can recall. There, Chris. You know.
Okay. I was worried. I was planning on reading the rest of the story just to find that little bit out.
That Black Canary, she's what a mall she is there. At Black Canary. These are my old time sayings. Oh man!
I didn't know Elongate Metamorpho was actually a member of the Justice League in this era. I was pleasantly surprised, actually.
It's obvious though that Clarion the Witch Boy is not a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory in this age.
Oh, by the way, the whole storyline. I'm going to spoil it for you, Chris. Here we go. So the whole storyline is the Seven Soldiers of Victory. Turns out there's actually eight, right? And that's the storyline. And Len Wein and the is it Wein or Ween?
I think it's Ween.
Ween.
Len Wein. He says in the beginning, in the introduction, that he wanted to get every character a cameo at least. So that's, he went out of his way to do that, but he couldn't actually fit them all in the book because it'd be too many characters to write and to keep the story straight and everything for the readers. So that's why he did that. So anyways, but he had just taken over the book. That was his first storyline that he had written, like the first major book he had written. He had written like House of Secrets and things like that. Like he had written, like he was, this was his first major assignment, and that was his first major book. That's where he launched his career. So it's okay that the writing was crap, I guess.
Actually, I thought the writing was quite good. It was
it was
just the datedness of everything that I thought was.
No, it's crap, Chris. The storyline.
Hey, Grant Morrison must have liked it because he used it.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the storyline. Once again, I'm going to throw this. Okay, but I'll just go say this. His Oriental thing, Wing, he kept on bringing him up. I don't know why they had to mention that he was Oriental, except for the fact that, you know, what white guy would name himself Wing? Nightwing, maybe? I don't know. But the point is, the unknown soldier that sacrificed his life to save them all was Wing. That's what's revealed at the end. So... so he was the eighth soldier that was unknown and that nobody knew of. So I don't know if he's still the unknown soldier because it kind of kills the gimmick, doesn't it? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's not Wing, but anyways, so he was the known soldier Wing. And I like this, Chris, that the storyline is that these people have been wiped from history. So nobody remembers them and they're from the past already. And they're thrown for they're from the 40s, when they saved this whole this world or whatever. They saved the world with this weapon that, by the way, when they actually make it, it's it's like a MacGyver weapon. Like it's like a stick of gum and a toothpick. And I'm like, this is the great weapon. Nobody else could possibly come up with something this evolved to attack this creature and free this hand. But anyway, so the characters are from the 40s, whatever, but they're sent back farther in time. And now they have to go back into time to find them because that's why their history is being erased. So they go back into time. And the first couple characters, they're like, who are you and why are you saving me? And they don't know the people saving them. Then the next characters show up, right? You know, it's like Batman and whatever. And the character looks at him and goes, Batman, what are you doing here? I'm like, when would he have met Batman? and then later on, they don't know the characters again. Like in the next issue, I'm like, see, that's bad writing. And it gets me to mine where I'm going, it's 107, which was the first of a two-parter, which is also bad writing. He hadn't found his way yet. This was actually the return. This is the one where he's bringing back the characters, Human Bomb, Freedom Fighters. It's that he has an idea that the Earth 1 and Earth 2 are going to, Len Wein has an idea that they're going to, like, get together, right? Like, Earth 1 and Earth 2 again, and now they're not going to be able to do it just once a year. They're going to be able to get together whenever they feel like it, because now they figured out a machine, and Red Tornado screws up the machine.
Because that's what this comic series needs, more characters.
Yeah. So Red Tornado screws up the thing, because he's jealous, because he can't get home to Earth 2. Long story. And, anyways... And so Len Wein, who had decided to call it Crisis on Earth Swastika, like he had actually put in the swastika as the title. And Julia Schwartz, the editor, was like, well, you know, I was alive in the 40s and never is there going to be a title with a swastika in a book that I'm editing. So he erased those edges and that's how it became Earth X, though it's never once referred to during the comic. Right. So anyway, so this was it was, but it would have been titled Crisis on Earth Swastika, I believe, would have been the official title then. Wow. It must have been. So anyway, so they go back there and there's Human Bomb, Phantom Lady, freaking Black Condor. Who else is it there? The Ray, Uncle Sam, and Doll Man, I think. It's the other one.
So yeah, that's what's the crossover freedom without Doll Man?
Oh, yeah. And it's the same thing. It's like every single time that I'm reading all this stuff, and it's like constantly, it's like a thing where oh man, this is like here's a robot, and they're fighting a robot. Doesn't explain why, you know, the Nazis here have these robots that are so incredibly advanced. But the robots are constantly talking us, telling us what they're thinking and strategy before they do it. So because a robot possibly could not possibly, a robot, I'd like to repeat, a computer could not possibly calculate its strategies without talking it through. And
it's the comic equivalent of a bomb with a blinking timer and a sound.
Yes.
Like, beep, 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 beep.
Yes, it is. And I'm watching this and I'm reading this and I'm just like, this is what's going on here? And they're fighting these things. And man, I can't even think of like all the awful stuff that's happening. But here's a good example. Like they have to go into like and save these, turn off this mind controlling machine that the Nazis are using. And this is how this whole book goes. It's here's a hugely unrealistic but impossible to solve situation for the heroes, where all of a sudden they'll be losing the fight. And somebody will get a bright idea to try something that's completely improbable. And coincidentally, right at the right moment, it works. And he does this like 8 times because he's split up the teams again, right? So it's like it happens every single time. So it'll be like this robot has the ability to like electrocute everything around him so you can't reach him and turn it off. Well, Doll Man, he'll just go inside. And what he'll do is he'll go inside and he'll just rewire things until he coincidentally hits the right wires to turn it off. And you know, or here's my favorite one. They go back and they run into Cersei. What is that? I think that's her name or whatever. You know, that this magician one is Satana, right? She gets everybody. It's Flash, Red Tornado, and Santana?
Santana. It's like the guy with the guitar. That's the one you want, right?
It's Santana. Anyways, she gets turned into a hummingbird. So now she has no vocal cords, right? So she can't talk backwards. She can't enchant her spells. The Red Tornado is turned into like a mole. And Flash is turned into a like half snail. So he's slow, you know, it's like the things you'd most hate. And then they're having this like fight, like this power fight where like they're shooting, like she makes them fight each other. And there's Zatanna, whatever. She's sitting there going, I can't save them. I can't talk. But I'm noticing as I'm flapping my wings here, I'm flapping them in certain frequencies. And if I flap them in just the correct frequencies in the correct order, it almost sounds like words. And that way, I'm not kidding. I'll create the words that will create the magic enchantment, say it backwards, and save them. And then she does. And I'm like, holy crap on a stick. And then...
Who hasn't been sitting there and a bird goes by and their wings flap it just the right way and it sounds like a racial slur?
But see, but the best thing is that you only know that because that book was written in the 70s. If that book was written now, you would have no idea of that because she wouldn't be able to communicate it.
No, she would not. We wouldn't have word balloons telling me what she was thinking.
Oh, I miss word balloons.
It's just terrible. And here's another good example. So, and there's they're like I say, they're different places. They have the Superman of Earth 2, who's the older, wiser one, and he's with his group, and it's like Batman or whatever. And anyway, so they're off in Japan on Mount Fujiwara or whatever it is there. That's where their machine they have to stop is, right? And they're at the top, and so anyways, he goes, the Superman goes, wow, this planet sure is different than my planet. On my planet, the Japanese were allies with the Nazis. And here's this Japanese dude, this really old Japanese dude who's at the top of the mountain and turns to him and goes, well, we once were, but just as the war was wrapping up, they betrayed us and we've been paying for it ever since. And I'm thinking to myself, now, even if this old Japanese guy did speak English, his first thought should have been, your planet? Are you fucking crazy?
just casually. Yeah, I know how that could be on your planet. That is rough.
Actually, Mo, I found myself reading my issue thinking, I don't know if this would be better with more dialogue or less. Because I definitely was finding, like, huge plot holes.
Huge!
I was spending a lot of time on each page.
Oh. Huge. So the Japanese guy's okay with this guy saying he's from another planet. No problem. And I'm just like, this whole book's like this. I'm like, it's crap. Like, it's like it's nice that they brought back the Freedom Fighters characters and the Seven Soldiers of Victory and it's like, it's just, but when I say it's crap, it's not fair, because in the era, I know that these were huge selling books. And it's like, in the era, all that counted was the adventure. Like, in 1973, October 1973 for me, and all that counted is the adventure really, really big and exciting, and do the good guys win? And that's it. So these plot holes and these logic things and all these things that now, as a modern reader, you wouldn't put up with. It just didn't seem important then. Another thing that's really, really interesting is just how different the Batman is. And I don't mean the obvious brooding. I mean, the Batman is just as dumb as anybody else. And he'll get caught just like anybody else. Now, when they're caught, everybody will be like, how are we going to solve this? And the Batman will go, let me think. And he'll think for a while. And then he'll be the one to come up with a solution. But it's not like the Batman, but I mean, it's like the Batman we know now, like the legend is built up to the point where no matter, like if all the characters in DC fought each other in a one-on-one tournament, people think he would win even though he has no powers because he's so prepared and such a strategic master and a genius and has so many different tricks and is always one step ahead. This Batman is always two steps behind until, you know, like he's got no, it's just so different. It's weird.
Was Robin even invited to this clan bake? Because I do not remember him.
No, I don't think he was in yours. He was in mine.
Oh, okay.
He was in mine in the issue 107.
But, okay, yeah. I just wanted to say clan bake, so.
That's good.
I really like that you said clan bake, I'll be honest.
Clan bake's another good term. Yeah,
bring that one back.
So anyways, but the point is, at the end of the day, that the good guys get the Duke and win the game and save the world. So the other book I read was from Marvel, and it was fantastic. And it was Tomb of Dracula, number 13. And that was on Marvel Unlimited. Like I say, I already had this trade paperback, because the thing is, there's this 1980s story with All-Star Squadron and Justice League and JSA that's written by Roy Thomas. And it was like one of my favorite of all time, which is why I was buying these trade paperbacks when they're on sale on Comixology. Those Justice League ones, that already had it. But this one I went through, the like Keith recommended, the Marvel Unlimited. It's got all 70 issues of Tome of Dracula. And now I got to read them all.
Oh, nice.
Because at $2 a pop, that would be $140 worth of reading right there that I'm getting for less than that for a year, right? Nice. And it was so great. Gene Colan's art is fantastic. Marv Wolfman writes a nice, tight, exciting story. There's not a lot of like background given, but it doesn't really need to be, because the characters are just the situations are pretty logical. There was only one time I was going, well, I don't know what's going on or who this guy is, but everything was really well. And it gave Blade, it's like his second appearance, and it gave his origin. And this was fantastic. And it was like, it was so different. Whereas everything from DC was just like no logic and everything's force fed to you and the characters are talking too much. This felt much more modern. I thought it was awesome. So
yeah, I've read that because I own the Essential Editions, which I mean, you can really see the art going on there because the 70s colors were crap.
It suited this though, because it was a lot of like, it's like dark still. It's like a dark, it's not like a, it's a, yeah, there's a green, but it's a dark green. Yeah, there's a red, but it's a blood red, dark red, almost maroon, right? Like, so it suits the book, but I can see what you mean. I mean, I would think this would look amazing without the colors, because he's just awesome.
I'm not sure when they did, because there was the adaptation of Dracula that I think that whole team worked on. They adapted the original novel. Was that in Tomb of Dracula, or was that in one of the magazines? Maybe
they also had a giant sized Dracula,
yeah.
And they had there was a few different things that were going on. So I'm not sure if that was in Tomb or if that was somewhere else. But yeah, there was a few different things going on.
Yeah, because I read a hardcover years ago that they had collected all of what they did, and then they got back together to do an ending for it because they had never actually finished adapting the novel. But it was black and white. That's why I mentioned it.
It might even, there was a Dracula magazine as well. So
yeah, it probably was the Dracula magazine.
Yeah.
Oversized.
I just want to say that, I mean, I picked these two because they were Marvel Unlimited and they were in Comixology, and I had already bought, you know, I had a membership to one and I'd already bought the other one. There's so many books that I wanted to find that I couldn't find that I wanted to do this with. And I marked some of these down because these books seem incredible. Like the names of these, The Adventures of the Big Boy. There's one I wanted to definitely, I'm like, because it sounds like it might be semi-autobiographical.
Autobiographical.
That too.
Yes, there you go.
There you go.
Who published that one, Mo?
Adventures of the Big Boy? I don't remember. I don't know who that was. I you know what? I did know, and I took it out of here. So, but it was like a Charlton or something like that. Alvin, I didn't know Alvin was around that long. Like, I thought he was created in the 80s in the cartoon that when I was growing up. So I didn't realize Alvin and the Chipmunks was that old. And apparently Alvin started in 1962 though. I wanted to read this one just because the name is great. Career Girl Romances, number 77. I'm like, well, that's right up my alley. How could I not want to read Career Girl Romances? Another one called Cartoons, like car, like three big words. So everything's a car, you know, like every cartoon's about a car. Casper in Space, number 8. Number 8 of Casper in Space. I repeat, Casper the Friendly Ghost in Space. Chris had already brought this one up. Chili was actually a guy, though Millie's rival. He was Marvel's Archie ripoff. Is what he was.
Was he a guy? Because the issue I was looking at, there was a redhead on the a beautiful redhead on the cover.
Yeah, that's
was
like
hot. I would have done her.
That was, yeah. I know what you're talking about, but yeah, no. This is actually what. No, at least that was my understanding. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe Chili isn't the guy, but it's either way, it's like an Archie style book. Mm-hmm. Combat Kelly, which was a Marvel comic book, and I just love
it. Oh, I looked at that too, but I couldn't find it. There wasn't even illegal downloads of that one.
I know. I was looking for some online scan or something like that. Maybe I could read it online. I couldn't find it. Dagger the Invincible from Gold Key. It's like Gold Key didn't just have Turok. They had a bunch of these characters. Turok's the only one that survived, but they had a bunch of.
And Dagger was my favorite. I had a whole bunch of issues from back in the day that I stole from a hairdresser. My mom's hairdresser used to keep comics.
Borrowed. You're planning to bring them back still.
any day now.
I think they might have been a gift from her because I love them so much. But because every time my mother got her hair done, I'd have to go with so I could read about the adventures of Dagar.
The Invincible. Dope and Dan. I wanted to read Dope and Dan because the name was Dope and Dan. E-Man. E-Man was a character created by this is number one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Joe Staton character.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that character's that old. I thought the character was invented in the 80s.
No. E-Man number one, the first ever appearance in 1973 from Charlton.
And I guess believe he just made a comeback.
Yeah, he did him like the last one, like 2011 or something like that. Like he managed to regain the rights and over the years has done him over and over again. So that was another one. Girl Love Stories. Girls Love Stories. I thought that was good, just the title. The Great Gazoo had a comic, and I would have read that, as I would have read the Harlem Globetrotters if I could have found their comic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love that. Here's one that's especially amazing. Issue number 5 of Lidsville. Are you guys familiar with this book, Lidsville, at all?
No.
Okay, it's about a teenager from, like I say, Gold Key. It's about a teenager who gets transported into another planet where the planet is entirely made up of magical alive hats. I'm not kidding. Like, brilliant. I'm like, I would go out of my...
Oh my God.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Oh, I wonder if all these properties are actually floating around with the rest of the Gold Key library from publisher to publisher.
Well,
and who wouldn't want to put their hands on that property?
But tell me this. Did you know about Adventures of the Big Boy? So it's from Big Boy Publishing, great name, but the writer and artist of number one, the artist is Bill Everett, the writer is Stan Lee.
No kidding. So what, by Big Boy Publishing, is there?
Yeah.
Well, the one that it's been around for a while, because the one that I was looking at for my birth month is issue number 196.
Right, but this is hilarious. So, Adventures of the Big Boy, number one and number two, by the same creative team that created Daredevil. It's like,
yeah.
Wow, this is pretty different. Pretty different.
Well, that reminds me of like that book, Cartoons. Not only was it about, obviously, cartoons about cars, but the other reason I wanted to was because the issue that I have, and this is from all things I could look up, is legit. The issue was number 7,310, meaning it started being published, apparently, during the Egyptian times when the pyramids were being built. So
perhaps it came out daily.
There was another one called Cycle Tunes, and it was on issue 19,000 something.
I think Cartoons I actually did read like as late as the 80s. I think there was a magazine called that. I'm guessing it's probably the same publication.
So you guys all remember the Mod Squad?
Mm-hmm.
How about Mod Wheels? Do you remember that?
I
do.
That. Yep.
Mod Wheels, also from Gold Key. Plop number one came out. Plop, if you guys aren't familiar, there was of course, yeah. Okay, in a couple minutes, that's fine. Plop number one. There was out there was Mad Magazine, of course, and then Cracked came out, and then Marvel started Crazy, and Plop was the DC version of Mad Magazine. Of course, 20 some odd years later, they'll end up buying the real property. So take that, William Gaines. Prez number two, about a teenage president. I think that might even be a Marvel property or DC, one or the other.
That's DC, yeah. Yeah. DC. Yeah, they bring Prez back every 10 or 15 years. They do another.
It fails. It's
like a 16-year-old who's president.
Yeah, I just read the trade, and it's from the DCU and press, and it's fantastic. If only I had paid money for it. If I paid money for it 15 months ago, then maybe it would have had a shot.
Is the second trade out of that? Because it was a 12 issue.
There is no second trade, unfortunately. They canceled the second miniseries because presumably the sales weren't there.
Well, Keith,
finish it off with a 12 pager.
The question that I have for you is, were you planning on buying 2,000 of them?
Yeah, I mean, I feel some guilt, but the fact that it only sold 4,000 copies, I don't feel like a lot of guilt. I feel a little bit of guilt.
I got a couple more of these I gotta get to here. Strange Sports Stories number one. I know that there's like CM Punk is doing Strange Sports Stories or something like that for Vertigo, but the original was back then. I don't know if you guys ever read any of those, but man, I remember having like a digest version of some of those. They were great, like in the 80s and 70s and stuff. There's a comic book, and I'm guessing this was a propaganda type comic book about why America was better or something, because I don't know, or I don't know what it could be. It was called Soviet Life number 10. And my final one, the one that I really wish I could have found, this was issue number 251 of this series. Have you guys ever heard of PS, the Preventative Maintenance Monthly? Anybody?
Is that Will Eisner's?
Well, he did some of the stuff on it. It was published by the Department of the Army, and it would be things like reminding you to like tighten the screws on your Jeep so that it could turn properly, but done in like a Beetle Bailey comedy type comic. So it'd be like apparently they didn't think people in the Army could read at all. Because they were like, and then it would have this woman called Connie, who was like this total cheesecake character who would always shame them for doing stuff wrong. And then like these comedy characters who always screw up. And then it would be like, this is the moral is, you know, remember to put the knives away if you're in the kitchen doing KP duty so nobody cuts themselves. Like it's, and they did like, and this is issue 251. It ends up with over 400 issues of these because there's a lot of lessons to learn in the Army, apparently. And
I'll
like,
bet you there was a dog's body featured in those comics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, talk about your unfortunate racial stereotypes. World War II era training manual is probably not a good place.
Well, I don't know. I used to love Beetle Bailey, and I still had like a Beetle Bailey, and I pick it up. And like half the jokes are about this one character who keeps walking around with a watermelon. And I'm going, I grew up on this. This is not good.
Beetle Bailey was good, but he's no Sad Sack.
Sad Sack was the best. You know, there was also 5 Sad Sack comic books published that month. 5.
maybe it was a long month.
It might have been a 5-week, 5-Wednesday month. That
5-Wednesday month. That's its label. All right, that's it. All right. So somehow this topic that looked like it was going to suck, we managed to go for an hour.
Yep, that's impressive. Good job.
Yeah,
that's 5 years of experience there.
Yes, that's true.
That's right.
All right, Chris.
Next week is going to be it's not going to be a live episode. It's going to be something we have in the can. It's a Scriptsmith Expo Scriptmiths episode from the Calgary Expo that we have. It has what movies was it? There was Sergeant Rock, a live performance in front of an audience. It was a good sized house too. You'll hopefully be able to hear them laughing. It was a good sized house, wasn't it? About half full.
Yep.
And
half full of a big room. Like it's not, it's really not half full of like a 30 room. Seat yeah, room. Yeah, yeah. It's like half full of like a 400 seat room.
It's not like the WTC live audience. It's a real audience.
Yeah, it's not like we pretended. Like there are actually like several hundred people there.
That's right. So it had you guys did Sergeant Rock.
Batman Year One was part of it.
Batman Year One, that's right. There were some World's Finest.
An earlier version of Akiva Goldsmith's Batman versus Superman, which was a very different take on Batman, on the whole idea of Batman versus Superman.
And then did we also do The Crow 2037? Was that
I can't remember if we actually got to it, so I guess we'll have to listen next week with everyone else.
That's right. It'll be new again.
It's been a couple of months since this happened, but it features you three are on stage. Has Alexander Fambo doing a bunch of different characters that all happen to be British. Because he's British.
He did a good job of being British.
Yeah, he puts on an accent and he stays with it. He's method, yeah, that guy.
He's like that guy. He's like Daniel Day-Lewis, you know. Very.
Even when we rapped, he didn't drop it.
Yep. He didn't drop that English accent. He stayed with
it. That's professionalism.
Yeah,
exactly. So at Renegade Arts Entertainment publisher Alexander Finwell and the ultra talented writer Ryan Ferrier, who does a pretty good Christopher Walken and an incredible Arnold Schwarzenegger up on stage. Anybody else I'm forgetting, obviously, audience members. And
yes.
Well, you've sold me, and I was there.
It was great.
So, yeah.
I was laughing. I was laughing sitting in the audience and glad that I wasn't on stage. And 2 weeks from now, Chris, we're coming back, and it's your topic. What do we got?
All right. Some of our listeners might not know this, but here at We Talk Comics, we're considered something of trendsetters. Mo, you keep a track of our demographics and stuff. What percentage of our audience would you say is Hollywood executives looking for their next big project?
It's between 37% and 48%.
You know what? You're wrong. 56.8% of our audience. Oh,
okay.
So next week, of course, we got Marvel's big show, Luke Cage, premiering on Netflix. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to be a hit. They're going to be looking for their next big comic book property to move into television. And I figured we'd do them a favor. I think each of us should come up with a pitch based on a current comic book property to make into television show. We should include any network you want, just television.
Yeah.
You should include a target demographic for this show. A brief elevator pitch for this show. What type of show it is. Is it a romantic comedy? You know, is it The Simpsons meet The Sopranos? What is it like that? And is it animated? And how many episodes they should have in the series?
Okay.
And it must be based on a current comic book property.
It's like Daredevil in a hallway.
Does it have to be Marvel?
No.
Okay. Any comic book property. Let's drop current, actually. I said current, and I didn't mean current.
Well, I've been reading this book called Walking Dead. I think I'll make a good show.
Oh, that reminds me, Mo. I know Google scares you based off last week's arguments. Please Google any pitches you may have to make sure it does not already exist.
Are you kidding? That's the best way to do it.
I honestly, Chris, I'm not 100% sure there is a comic property that hasn't been optioned.
Yeah. Well, except for maybe some of those ones that Mo brought up.
Well,
I would love to hear a pitch about sports stories.
Well, Big Boy probably hasn't been picked up. So,
well, we can do Big that. Boy did appear in The Simpsons, so.
Oh.
And, I mean, that was part of my reason to pick this topic, is I would like to see what's left. What isn't currently in development?
That's great. Picking up the pieces.
Just scrape to the bottom of the barrel.
Yes. Yes.
I love it. This is going to be fun. Everyone doubted mine and it was awesome. So I'm with you, Chris.
Yeah, I think that's it. The worse they sound, we're aiming for the better they are.
I'm thinking it's better than the serial killer's idea, at least. So we're good.
All right, let's wrap it up.
We're OUT.
Well, that's a wrap up, all right.